Track 7. Jesus begins his public life and Mary meets Jesus' first disciples.
The time has come for Jesus to leave home and begin the mission he came to earth for. Maria Valtorta describes how Jesus and Mary are sitting in the kitchen at Nazareth. Jesus clasps his mother to his side and holds her close to his heart. They are both silent, waiting. Mary caresses Jesus' right hand and his knees. Jesus pats Mary's arm and her head. Then Jesus rises and so does Mary. They embrace and kiss each other very fondly and repeatedly. They always seem to be on the point of separating and parting, but each time Mary embraces her creature over and over again. She is Our Lady, but she is still a mother who must part from her son and is fully aware of the final destination of his departure. Jesus takes his dark blue mantle, puts it on his shoulders, and pulls the hood onto his head. He arranges his haversack across his back. Mary helps him, and she delays endlessly in sorting his tunic, mantle, and hood, caressing him in the meantime. Jesus makes a sign of blessing in the room and goes towards the door. Mary follows him, and at the open door they kiss each other once again. The road is silent, solitary, and white in the moonlight. Jesus starts walking away. He turns round twice to look at his mother, who is leaning against the doorpost. Paler than the moon's rays, her eyes sparkling with silent tears. Jesus moves further and further away along the narrow white road. Mary is still weeping against the doorpost. Then Jesus disappears round a bend of the road. His evangelical journey, which will end on Golgotha, has just begun. Mary goes into the house, shedding tears, and she closes the door. She has also started her journey, which will take her to Golgotha and for us. Mary says to Maria Valtorta, "A mother never renounces her creature unless she is forced to. A son grows in our womb, and the tie that links him to us can never be completely broken. Even if the umbilical cord is cut, there is a nerve that always remains. It departs from the mother's heart and is grafted into the son's heart. It is a spiritual nerve, more lively and sensitive than a physical one. A mother feels it stretching, even with exceedingly severe pangs, if the love of God or of a creature or the need of the country takes her son away from her. And it breaks, tearing her heart, if death snatches her son from her." We move forward to the marriage feast at Cana. Mary has told Jesus that they have no more wine, and Jesus says, "Woman, what is there still between me and you?" Jesus, when saying these words, smiles gently, and Mary smiles too, like two people aware of some truth which is their joyful secret and which is ignored by everyone else. Mary says to the servants, "Do what he will tell you." In the smiling eyes of her son, Mary has read his consent, veiled by the great teaching to all those who are called. And Jesus says to the servants, "Fill the jars with water." I see the servants filling the jars with water brought from the well. I see the steward pour out some of the liquid with astonished eyes. He then tastes it with gestures of even greater astonishment. He relishes it, and he speaks to the landlord and the groom. Mary looks at her son once again and smiles. Then, having received a smile from him, she bows her head, blushing slightly. She is happy. Jesus gives an explanation to Maria Valtorta. He says, "That word still, which is omitted by many translators, is the key word of the sentence and explains its true meaning. I was the son, submissive to my mother, up to the moment when the will of my father told me that the hour had come when I was to be the master. From the moment my mission started, I was no longer the son, submissive to my mother, but I was the servant of God. My moral ties with my mother were broken. They had turned into higher bonds, all of a spiritual nature. I always called Mary my holy mother. Our love suffered no interruptions, neither did it even cool down. Nay, it was never so perfect as when I was separated from her as by a second birth. And when she gave me to the world and for the world as the Messiah and the Evangelizer. Her third sublime mystical maternity took place when she bore me to the cross in the torture of Golgotha and made me the Redeemer of the world. My first miracle happened because of Mary. It is a symbol that Mary is the key to miracles. I never refuse my mother anything, and because of her prayer, I also bring forward the time of grace. I know my mother, the second in goodness after God. I know that to grant you a grace is to make her happy, because she is all love. Besides, I wanted to make her power known to the world, together with mine. Since she was destined to be joined to me in the flesh, it was fair that she should be joined to me in the power that is shown to the world. We were one flesh, I in her, she around me, like the petals of a lily around its scented lively pistil. And she was united to me in sorrow, because we were both on the cross, I with my body, she with her soul. Just as a lily is scented because of its corolla and because of the essence extracted from it. I say to you what I said to the guests, thank Mary. It is through her that she had with you the master of the miracle, and that you have my graces, particularly those of forgiveness." Jesus, with six new disciples, returns to Nazareth for what could be the first time after leaving home. Mary is already at the door. "Son," she says, "Mother." They are in each other's arms. Mary, who is much smaller than Jesus, is leaning with her head on her son's chest, clasped in his arms. He kisses her blonde hair, and they enter the house. The disciples, including Judas Iscariot, remain outside to leave Jesus and Mary free in their first outpourings. "Jesus, my son." Mary's voice trembles as if it were choked with sobs. "Why, mother, why are you so upset?" "Oh, son," they told me, "in the temple that day there were some Galileans and some Nazarenes. They came back and they told me. Oh, son. But you can see, Mother, that I am well, says Jesus. I suffered no harm. God was glorified in his house. Yes, I know, son of my heart. I know it was like the blare awakening the sleepers. And I'm happy for the glory given to God. I'm happy that this people of mine wakes to God. I am not reproaching you. I will not be a hindrance to you. I understand you, and I am happy. But I begot you, son. Mary is still clasped by Jesus' arms, and as she has spoken, she held her little open hands pressed against her son's chest, her head turned up towards him, and her eyes shining with tears, ready to run down her cheeks. She is now silent. Mother, poor mother, dear mother. Jesus kisses her once again. Arriving home at another time in advance of his disciples, Jesus says to Mary, "How many things I have to tell you, my perfect friend, my sweet mother. But first of all, I beg you, I ask you to have so much mercy on those who will be coming tomorrow. Listen, they love me, but they are not perfect. You, teacher of virtue, oh mother, help me to make them good. I would like to save them all." Jesus has slipped at Mary's feet, and she now appears in her motherly majesty. "My son, what do you want? Your poor mother to do better than you do?" And Jesus replies, "I want you to sanctify them. Your virtue sanctifies. I brought them here deliberately, mother. One day I will say to you, come, because it will be then urgent to sanctify souls so that I may find them willing to be redeemed. And I will not be able by myself. Your silence will be as eloquent as my words. Your purity will assist my power. Your presence will keep Satan away. And your son, mother, will feel stronger, knowing that you are near him. You will come, will you not, my sweet mother?" "Jesus, dear son, I have a feeling that you are not happy. What is the matter, creature of my heart? Was the world hostile to you? No? It is a relief to believe it, but, oh yes, I will come, wherever you wish, as and when you wish, even now in this blazing sunshine, or by night in cold or wet weather. You want me, here I am." "No," says Jesus, "not now, but one day." "Oh, how sweet is our home and your caresses," says Jesus. "Let me sleep like this with my head on your knees. I am so tired. I am still your little son." And Jesus really falls asleep, tired and exhausted, sitting on the mat, his head on the lap of his mother, who happily caresses his hair. During the visit, Jesus asks Peter to be sensitive about telling his mother all that has been happening. He says, "She is already quite sad because she has realized that I am suffering. Respect my mother. She lives in seclusion and silence. She is active only in virtue and prayer, for me, for you, for everybody. Let the gloomy lights of the world and harsh quarrels be far away from her retreat, which is protected by discretion and purity. Do not put even the shadow of hatred where everything is love. Please respect her. She is braver than Judith, as you will see. but do not compel her before her time to taste the dregs which are the sentiments of the wicked people of the world. A little later, Jesus is encouraging his disciples to remember the importance of not losing God's friendship by sinning. "Look," he says, "there is my mother over there. Can you conceive an inclination to evil in her? Well, since love urges her to follow me, she will leave her home when my love so wishes. She, my teacher, used to say to me, 'Son, let your mother be among your disciples. I want to learn your doctrine.' That was she who possessed that doctrine in her womb and even before in her soul as a gift of God to the future mother of the incarnate Word. But this morning, after asking me once again, she said, 'Decide whether I can come without losing my union with God and without my heart being corrupted by what there is in the world and by that which you say penetrates with its stench. Because my heart has always been, is, and wants to be only of God. I search my heart, and as far as I know, I think I can do it.' And at this point, unknowingly, she gave herself the highest praise. 'Because I find no difference between the spotless peace I enjoyed as a flower in the temple and the peace I have now within me, now that I have been a housewife for over 30 years. But I am an unworthy servant who does not know the things of the spirit well and is even less capable of judging them. You are the Word, the Wisdom, the Light, and you may be the light of your poor mother, who is agreeable not to see you any longer, rather than not be grateful to the Lord.' And I had to say to her," continues Jesus, "while my heart trembled with admiration, 'Mother, I tell you, it is not you that will be corrupted by the world, but it is the world that will be purified by you.'" On another visit, sharing some figs with his mother, Jesus asks her point blank, "Mother, have you seen the disciples? What do you think of them?" Mary, who is about to put a fig in her mouth, starts, withholds her hand, lifts her head, and looks at Jesus. "What do you think of them, now that I have shown them all to you?" urges Jesus. And Mary replies, "I think that they love you, and that you will get much out of them. Love John as you know how to love. He is an angel. I do not worry when I think that he is with you. Peter, too, is good. Somewhat harder because he is older, but sincere and convinced. And his brother too. They love you as best they can just now. Later, they will love you more. Also our cousins, now that they are convinced, will be faithful to you. But the man from Kerioth," meaning Judas Iscariot, "I do not like him, son. His eye is not crystal clear, and his heart even less so. He frightens me." "He is full of respect for you," says Jesus. "Too much respect," says Mary. "He is also full of respect for you, but not for you the master, for you the future king, from whom he hopes to receive wealth and glory. He was a nobody, just a little more than the others at Kerioth. He hopes to play an important role at your side." Oh, Jesus, I do not want to be uncharitable, but I think, even if I do not want to believe it, that in case you should disappoint him, he will not hesitate to take your place or endeavour to do so. He is ambitious, greedy, and vicious. He is more suitable to be the courtier of a worldly king than to be your apostle, my son. He frightens me. And the mother looks at Jesus with two eyes full of dismay in her pale face. Jesus sighs. He ponders. He looks at his mother. He smiles to encourage her. And he says, "Also that is needed, mother. If it were not he, it would be someone else. My college must represent the world. And in the world they are not all angels. Neither are they all of the same character as Peter and Andrew. If I chose everything perfect, how could the poor diseased souls dare hope to become my disciples? I have come to save what is lost, Mother. John is saved as he is, but how many are not?" And Mary says, "I am not afraid of Matthew. He redeemed himself because he wanted to. He forsook his sin and his customs desk, and he acquired a new soul to come with you. But Judas of Kerioth did not. On the contrary, pride is becoming more and more the master. But you already know that, son. Why do you ask me? I can but pray and cry for you. You are the master also of your poor mother."